Hey, Joe Shirk here, a bassist from Messiah Prophet, and you are listening to Wild Man and Steve.
You are about to listen to the intersection of faith, talk, and music. The Wild Man and Steve show starts right now.
Okay, Steve, we're going to open the show in a different way tonight.
Excellent. It's about time we did something different.
Now, wait a minute. Don't I say that every single time?
Oh, wait. You're right. This is exactly the same as every other show.
So I'm going to open it with a joke. And not just a joke, but a funny joke. Okay.
And I can't tell you right now how nervous I am.
Okay, but not just
figuring out words.
But listen, okay, you're going to laugh. And this isn't, it isn't even going to be a sympathy laugh. You are going to like, you better not drink something when I get to the end because this is it, right? So are you ready?
I am. I feel like Charlie Brown trusting Lucy to hold the football, but I'm going to trust that you are going to say something funny.
So, well, probably should chime in as usual and say, folks, there is a great guest coming up, so just keep listening. So here it is. So, all right. So I ordered a pizza, okay, and from Domino's, and they brought it to the house. Now, you don't know. So you're waiting for the punchline, right?
I am, as okay. are anybody who's actually still listening at this point, yes.
See, that's the problem. You see, this joke isn't about the punchline. It's all about the delivery.
Folks, we've said it many times before, but this will be the last episode of Wild Man and Steve. There's no way I can continue working with that. First of all, you promised that I would laugh, and it wouldn't be a sympathy laugh. That didn't happen. Second of all, that may be one of the best / worst dad jokes I've ever heard. I can't wait. I hate to admit, I can't wait until this episode is over so that I can go out and tell my daughter that joke. That is fantastic. Love it.
Yes. All right. So, ladies and gentlemen, rank that opening. Go to Twitter at Wildman and Steve, # Wildman and Steve. And as we usually say, rank it from 1 to 10, 1 being the best and 10 being the best. Because all of our openings are the best. Right, Steve?
At least that's what we think.
Yes. Okay. All right. So now this is what everybody's waiting for. This is when I turn the show over to Mr. Segway, Steve Perkins, Latin teacher, rock and metal enthusiast, who just always does a great job in segueing all of our guests. And we have another amazing guest tonight. So, Steve, take it away.
You know, with me, wild man, when it comes to my brain, the genius switch is always in the on position. Okay. I'm always thinking about stuff and being inspired really by you. You inspire me. And given our love of classic Christian rock, and I want you to go with me on this. Could you imagine for just one moment a classic Christian rock radio? And here's where I want you to go. Could you just imagine it's like 1983, 1984. You know, you're driving down the road in your cool car, whatever you've got at that time, and you're punching a button on the radio because it was punch buttons and stuff back then, right? And you click over, and there's a voice that would come out, you know, saying, you know, welcome back to Classic Christian Rock Radio. Yeah, I'm your host. And, you know, be some silly DJ name like, you know, I don't know, like, you know, Mr. Bill or, you know, something goofy like that. And could you, would that not just be like the most awesome thing ever if that existed?
Yeah, I think so. Are you like talking about like, oh no, Mr. Bill? Is that what you're?
Exactly. That was kind of what was coming to mind was the, oh no, Mr. Bill. And yeah.
Well, I don't know how you do it, Mr. Segway. Ladies and gentlemen, he struck again because tonight we actually do have Mr. Bill from the station Classic Christian Rock Radio. Mr. Bill, how are you doing? And welcome to the program.
I'm great, Mr. Pastor Wildman and Steve. Yeah, I'm doing great and really glad to be on with you guys.
Yeah, we are honored to have you on. So there's a lot we're going to talk about tonight because we definitely have common interests. I mean, because this is what we're all about here. But I know you started Classic Christian Rock Radio in 2004, I believe.
Right.
Now, yep. Before that, were you also doing DJ type stuff or were you just a fan? Or tell us about your background there.
I have never did radio in my life. I grew up loving radio pretty much my whole entire life. I grew up in Simi Valley, a suburb of Los Angeles. So I grew up basically Southern California, Los Angeles radio market, which was probably one of the richest radio markets in the entire world, especially late 60s, going into the 70s with FM radio coming into being. But even going back before that, I remember being a kid. My dad had a shortwave radio in the garage that also had an AM band on it. So in the mid 60s, I'd be out in the garage and I would use my dad's radio and I would tune into Wolfman Jack from Baja California. Yeah. And I've always loved all kinds of music, but I especially loved Motown in the mid 60s and Wolfman played a lot of Motown. So it kind of goes back to that is it just being in love with radio and DJs and just the whole format going on into when FM radio came on. And I grew up with, going into the 70s, I listened to guys like Jim Ladd and Mary Turner. These were legendary disc jockeys at KMET in Los Angeles, which was just a legendary rock station. But also listened to some other guys that were not so well known. Like there was a guy named Jimmy Rabbit who was on KROQ, K-Rock, which is probably pretty well known to a lot of people. It was one of the first FM stations that really covered punk rock around 75, 76. And Jimmy Rabbit was on that station, had a night show. But he was a really different dude because he did country music and mixed it in with rock and punk. And it was just a real eclectic mix. And so I just grew up loving personalities and loving rock and love rock and roll music. Now, I became a Christian in high school when I was a junior in high school. And when around 76, 77, when I was out of high school and I was in my early years of college, I did have a friend in our college group who took me a couple times down to Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa. So I was actually down there on a couple Saturday nights for the big concerts that they had at Calvary Chapel, Chuck Smith, the really famous from the Jesus movement, the big concerts down there. This is towards the end of that movement, 76, 77. And so I got to see a couple of Saturday night concerts there. Also got to see Brian Duncan and the Sweet Comfort Band in 78, I think it was. They were playing at Calvary Chapel in Thousand Oaks, California. There were only about 30 of us there in the church that night. But it was nice because you got to see the band up really close and interact with them. But it was interesting because my experience early on was go to the concerts and you'd hear some really great live music. But then on the Saturday nights at Calvary Chapel, I'd go out and check out the tapes they were selling and take them home. And the music back in those days, the music just didn't have the punch that the live performance did, because what was happening back then is the record labels basically tried to mellow down the music for what they conceived as the record buying public at that, you know, the Christian public and the Christian bookstores that sold the music. So what was happening with the live performances didn't match what was on the tapes that you would buy or the albums. And so, and I really, the music I loved was hard rock music. I mean, you look at the late 60s, I was into the stuff I really liked, be like Janis Joplin, Jefferson Airplane, a lot of the psychedelic stuff out of the San Francisco area. I also like Deep Purple and yeah, and Led Zeppelin. And I mean, my music tastes go all over the place, but you know, I kind of leaned in that direction. And it just wasn't hearing that. So basically, even though I was a Christian, I listened to secular music for years and years and years because I just didn't see anything in the Christian market that was really, and this is, like I said, in the mid 70s. So I just was in the secular market and just stayed there until my son got into high school in the 90s, mid 90s. And my oldest son, he was listening to a lot of the ska and the punk music of that day, which would be like MXPX, the Orange County Supertones, the Insiders, those kind of things. And so I ended up going to a lot of concerts. I took my son and his friends to a lot of the concerts because Daniel couldn't drive yet. He was still too young to drive. And so I ended up seeing these bands in person, and I began to just fall in love with the contemporary Christian music, the Christian rock that was happening in the 90s, at least what my son was listening to, which was the pop, the punk, the ska, and the alternative music that was the young people in the 90s were listening to. And so that was kind of how I got it back into really Christian music. And also there was a show called The Ground Floor that was airing on Los Angeles radio in the late 90s. Kevin Allison, who was a DJ at KYMS, one of the legendary Christian stations in Los Angeles. I could never listen to that station because it was too far away. But later on, I did a lot of reading about KYMS, and they were just legendary in terms of Christian radio and bringing contemporary Christian music to the Los Angeles market on radio. And Kevin Allison, around the late 90s, early 2000s, had a show called The Ground Floor on Saturday nights. And Kevin played a lot of the Christian rock that I had missed over the years while I was listening to all the secular rock, and I didn't know all this stuff existed. So that's kind of my background there. And so I was really starting to get into Christian music through my son and through listening to Kevin Allison. I read an article in PC Magazine. I'm a little bit of a techie, not the greatest techie in the world, but I was pretty good at it. And my job as a computer system analyst, computer system specialist for a school district working in child nutrition. And I read this article in PC Magazine about Live 365. And I read that and I thought, hey, you know, I've always loved radio. I never got into it, but I always loved radio. And I read the article and I thought, this is interesting. I think I could probably do that. So in 2001, I launched a station called High Desert Christian Rock. We were living in Lancaster, California, high desert area north of Los Angeles, my wife and I and our three sons. And so I had computers and Live 365 was there, and so I started the station. I did that, and I was playing the music that my son listened to, the contemporary stuff. And as I was expanding the music library over time, I started to go back and pick up some of the older stuff from the 80s and the 90s and start to discover that for the first time because I was just not familiar with bands like Ken Tamplin and Shout. Or really, I mean, I knew who Stryper was, but I wasn't familiar with a lot of their music. Or White Cross, you know, or Bride, a lot of these bands I'd never heard, had never been familiar with, hadn't heard before. And I started adding them to the library. And around 2004, I had been adding these bands to the library and discovered that I really like the music from the 80s and the 90s better than the current stuff. Mm-hmm. And so, as far as what was available on internet radio at the time, again, Live 365 was the only game in town back then. This is the original Live 365, which began around 2000. I believe. I joined them in 2001. But looking over the stations that were available at the time, there were a lot of internet stations doing the contemporary Christian thing, contemporary Christian music. Almost nobody was doing what I called the classic Christian, which is the stuff from the 80s and early 90s. And so because I had fallen in love with this music and nobody was doing it, I decided I'm going to start this new station, call it Classic Christian Rock Radio. Because part of my thought at the time was, I'm looking for an alternative to the secular classic rock. Because I had grown up listening to it for years and years, loved the music, hated the lyrics. Mm. And, you know, it always bothered me. And now I had finally discovered all this great Christian rock where the music is pretty good and the lyrics were even better. And so that's why I was thinking as an alternative to what the secular world was offering. And that's how I came up with Classic Christian Rock Radio as an alternative to classic rock radio, which was really big, always has been big, I think still is, but it was really big back then. And so Classic Christian Rock Radio was born April 2004. After a few months, I shut down High Desert Christian Rock and just went with Classic Christian Rock Radio solely. And my library was really limited at the time, but it's just, I mean, that was like almost 19 years ago. So we've been building the library up. And I mean, there's been a lot of changes and a lot of expansion. But I have just more, as every year goes by, I just fall in love with this music more and more and more. The other thing, besides a love of radio and radio personalities that I grew up with, I've always had an interest in history as an individual, but also history of music. For example, if I turn on the TV and they have a documentary, any kind of documentary on the Beatles or the Stones,
yes.
Or PBS did a really great documentary a few years ago on the history of rock and roll, which was just terrific. If there's any kind of documentary dealing with the history of rock and roll, I'm there, I'm going to watch it because it's just the type of thing that I love, you know, looking at what happened in the past. How did all this music develop and how have all the different types of music developed? You know, what happened, you know, from Motown to the psychedelic music of the late 60s to the singer-songwriter period of the 70s to the punk music, you know, the Sex Pistols and all that in the mid 70s. And then you get into the metal music of the 80s and the hard rock, and then you get into the alternative music of the 90s. I mean, I'm just fascinated by all of this. And so as the years have gone by with Classic Christian Rock Radio, I wanted to go back and find out more about the history of contemporary Christian music, especially Christian rock. And I'm still learning, but I mean, I just have a love for that. And so there's kind of a dual purpose to Classic Christian Rock Radio. Our number one purpose is to present the good news about Jesus Christ through music and through word, through the words that myself and my other two DJs, things that we say on the air during the live shows, and also through the ministry spots that we air during this on the station as well. We want people, we don't push it in your face, but it's there. You hear the good news of Christ through us and through our words in the ministry spots, and especially through the music. But the other purpose of Classic Christian Rock Radio is to educate people about the history of Christian music and especially Christian rock, because one of the bees under my bonnet is that Christians do not appreciate the heritage of the Christian music that is here. If you go into the secular world, the general public who enjoys classic rock in the secular world, they listen to it, they tune into stations, they They'll buy the albums. If they reissue something from a classic rock band, they'll go out and buy it. They'll go to the concerts. They know the history. They know about the bands. It's not like they enjoyed it 30 years ago and it ended and that was it. Nobody knows about it. I mean, if you're a fan of secular classic rock, you know all the bands from the early days to now. You know about the musicians. I mean, you're just into it. When you look at the church, at Christians, that doesn't exist. I mean, it exists among a very minute number of people. Most Christians are not even aware of the early artists that were around in the late 60s and early 70s. They may have heard of Resurrection Band. They may have heard of Larry Norman. A lot of them haven't. Maybe Randy Stonehill, maybe Phil Keaggy. But, you know, a lot of the other acts, Barry McGuire, a Second Chapter of Acts, I'm not really good with memory, but I mean, there's so many early artists who are so influential that most Christians have never even heard of. And all of today's music is built upon what they did back in the 70s and the 80s. They paid the dues, they paid the price so that artists, the Christian artists today, can do what they do. And so part of the purpose of for our station is to, while we play all this great music, my musical tastes are all over the place. If you listen to the station, you'll realize that we play a lot of, you know, almost everything. So we go from the late 60s up through about the early 2000s. We don't play newer stuff unless it's from an artist who was around prior to 2000. But we play the music. We talk about the artists. I'll talk about the history. I have programs that play old interviews and old specials from the late 70s and early 80s. So we want to help educate listeners about the great history of Christian music and the artists behind the music so that they can have an appreciation for it that just is not out there. Anyway, I've been on my soapbox long enough.
Well, it's interesting. I just want to say real quick, Steve, I would say Steve and I and our listeners, probably all of our listeners, I would guess, are shouting a hearty amen to everything you just said.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I'm sitting there. I mean, the number of times that, you know, Wild Man, you and I have used the expression, you know, brother from another mother.
Yeah.
We got another brother right here. Oh. So many different ways. Again, this is another one, Wild Man. I'm going to say, if you want to take a snack break, go ahead and leave for about another hour or two, because I've got about 1,000 questions. Yeah. Just based on stuff that Mr. Bill has just started saying. I want to go back to what you were talking about with the early days and the live bands and the different sound than what was on the cassettes or the 8-tracks.
Yeah,
or the album.
Yeah.
Are you aware, and I'm really asking this as a genuine question because I don't know, are you aware of any some really good live recordings from back in the day? For example, everybody knows Frampton Comes Alive. Everybody yeah. knows Deep Purple's Made in Japan. Yeah. Those just quintessential live albums, and then set the track for everybody else doing, you know, a double live album, and everybody and their dog did that. Do we have that from some of those bands, Christian bands from back in the day that you know of?
Early live recordings?
Yeah.
Not really. I mean, the earliest live recordings, there's a couple of albums that are considered some of the best, and that would be To the Bride. That was Barry McGuire in Second Chapter of Acts with a band called David. And then also what most folks consider the best early live Christian album was How the West Was Won, O-N-E, and that was Second Chapter of Acts, Phil Keaggy. Yeah. and a band called David. And I like the second chapter of Acts is okay, but they're not my favorite. I love Phil Keaggy, and there are some amazing tracks and some great guitar work by Phil Keaggy on that particular album, How the West Was Won.
I would say Time is one of the ones.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, we've got live albums, and again, some of the later bands, and again, and our listeners aren't seeing this video, but right now I've got a virtual background. I've got all the Striper album covers up. And right now I can see in my own background a couple of the live Stripers. Bloodgood had, you know.
Can I say something real quick, though? Yeah. They just didn't make live albums in the Christian market. They didn't make live albums.
That's what I wanted.
Yeah. Really, the How the West Was Won was a really good live album. But probably the next live album I can think of that came along was the Live Forever or Live Forever album from Mylon Lefevre and Broken Heart, which came out, I think, around 81, which is another that, I mean, that was a really terrific live album. And then DeGarmo and Key came out with their live album just a day. So as you get into the 80s, you start to get more and more live albums from bands who are a little bit more on the rock side than the contemporary music side. So in the 70s, it just didn't exist. There were a few, but not much. And they were on the Love Song had a live album in 77, live from San Antonio. But again, that's Love Song. It's not going to be your Broken Heart or your DeGarmo and Key.
So I'm going to ask a question of both of you guys. I'm just speculating and thinking here. And you were talking about how so many Christians who themselves may know the backstories of, you know, half a dozen secular bands and so forth, but don't know anything about the Christian bands. Put that over against what you were saying about the record companies wanting to make the albums maybe a little more palatable for a general Christian market and so forth. And I'm just wondering, do you guys think that there is a tendency or a strand among certain Christian churches, branches of the church, that say all that really matters is the word and the form? So in other words, content is all that matters. Form really doesn't. And therefore, we're not going to pay attention to all the format of the music. Again, whether it's rock or blues or, again, punk, ska, whatever, we're not going to care about it. All we really care about is the word. And obviously, we care about the word as Christians, right? At the end of the day, it is the word of Christ and the gospel. That's true. But I also think, you know, God created us in his own image, and he's an infinitely creative being. And so the creative impulse is in us by design in terms of art and music and so forth. And so I think maybe we sell that short. But I wonder, do you think that's why? And why bother recording a live album? You know, we don't do that, you know. And do you think there's some of that just kind of built in the way that some branches of the church kind of see art and so forth?
I should let Pastor Wildman get in here. Let him answer before I answer. So, Pastor, you want to put your two cents in?
I think, not being the expert researcher, but I think there might be a point to that. That's one of the reasons why Christian rock did get a bad rap and has received a bad rap, because, and even some Christian rock artists have admitted this. They have come out and said that our standards were not where they should have been. We should have had higher standards musically. We focused only on the message. I believe it was Rex Carroll who came right out in the 80s and said from White Cross that that's ridiculous. We should be setting the standard for the world because we're serving Christ. Ours should be better is what he was saying.
Ours should be setting that standard artistically. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, artistically and our musicianship should be better. So it'll be interesting to hear Mr. Bill's take on this, having studied this, because I've always been intrigued by the history of Christian rock, the ups and downs that it's been through, and how much of it is to blame because of them and how much of it isn't because of them. But that's my answer.
Okay.
people say you're giving up your right to rule. But I've been to the land of me, and I know I was never free. Freedom came when I gave it all away. That's why I'm calling Independence Day. I'm calling Independence Day.
I've got so many thoughts racing around my head. So let me see. Well, first of all, what you were saying earlier, Steve, about how we have a God who is so creative, and we were created in His image, and so that ability to create is in us, not because we're such great people, but because God has put that into us. Because we carry His image, we're image bearers. We have that ability to create. And God has given, it's a great gift that He's given us. Kemper Crabb wrote a series of articles, this is years ago, in HM Magazine, which dealt with this subject. And I think he expressed a lot what you said, Steve, that as Christians, we should be the greatest when it comes to art, the arts. Christians should be at the forefront. They should be at the top because we know our God through Christ. And He's given us this ability, and we should be able to express that because we have such a deeper understanding of the Creator than the person who doesn't know Him. And so that's how it should be. Now, when going back into history, when you think back to the late 60s, early 70s, and this, all of the contemporary music goes back to the Jesus movement of the late 60s and the early 70s. And the context here is you have to go into the 60s where you had the hippie. I mean, this is true with secular music as well, because the hippie movement had such an effect on secular music, and it had an effect on the beginnings of Christian music as well. You have the hippie movement of the 60s. And what happened is in the late 60s and early 70s, you have all these hippies. And I was born in 56. So I graduated high school 74. So I kind of came... I was in high school towards the tail end of the hippie movement, you know, in the early 70s. But I mean, I remember as a kid, even in middle school, I remember all this. I mean, I can remember going back to 63 when President John Kennedy was assassinated. I remember that. I remember the assassination of Robert Kennedy and Martin Luther King in 68. I mean, these are memories that are built into me. The Vietnam War, these are things that I lived through even though I was really young. I remember them. But you have all these hippies, and the period of the 60s into the early 70s was a period of searching for truth. It's something that all of the young people were, it was very prevalent among them in those days. It's one of the things that I don't see in our society and among young people today, unfortunately, is that seeking for truth. But that was really preeminent in the late 60s and early 70s. And they were seeking for truth in all different kinds of ways. But there were a number of the hippies who found sought the truth, and they found the truth in Jesus. And they were coming out of the hippie movement in the world into the churches. Now, for a lot of them, they were into the music as well. I mean, it was all together. It was the hippies and the music and the drugs and all that. Now, you know, the drugs and the sex they put aside, but they kept the music. And so they brought the music with them into the church. Now, you have a church in the late 60s, early 70s that was still very traditional, very much musically and in terms of worship, very much in the past, and very much opposed to all of the rock and roll from the 50s and 60s for a lot of good reasons. If you look at the lifestyle of the musicians, if you look at the lyrics of the music, there was a lot for the church to just say, whoa, I don't want anything to do with this. And so when you have the hippies bringing the music with them, even though they brought a different lyrics, they brought a different message, it was because of the type of music and because of the appearance of these hippie Christians, it was an automatic putting up the wall against them that we can't accept this because of the appearance. Fortunately, you have a revolutionary like Chuck Smith at Calvary Chapel, who God called to invite and say, you know what, these hippie kids, they have as much a right to be in the church as anybody else. These are people that God has saved. He's brought them in, and I'm going to bring them into my church. And I can't under or overemphasize how significant that was for Chuck Smith to do that down at Calvary Chapel in Southern California. There may have been other churches, I'm just not aware of them, but that was the one growing up in Southern California that I'm aware of. It's the one that got the most notice at the time. So
remember, you probably saw the Jesus music, that movie.
Yes, yeah.
Focuses very much on that. Certainly the early part of that film focuses on the Calvary Chapel and specifically on that.
Next week, the dynamic duo return.
Same Wild Man and Steve time, same Wild Man and Steve channel.
The Wild Man and Steve show is now partnering with New Release Today. Find out more about them at newreleasetoday.com. And don't forget to check out our website, where you can also leave us a review at wildmanandsteve.com.
Sounds like rock and roll to me.